Bridging is a podcast produced by Özlem Özkan in Amsterdam. If you are inspired by this episode and if you only shared good things with your friends, family members or coworkers, please remember to think of bridging next time. If you have any questions, please ask it in the comments of the last post on Instagram at Özkan Özlem, at OZKANOZLEM. It's Özlem Özkan, and this is Bridging, a podcast which will take you on a bridge to somewhere else, sometimes somewhere familiar, and sometimes somewhere new. In Bridging, I interview life experts with a story to share. Stories of entrepreneurship, cultural diversity, self-empowerment, personal growth, and other topics that shape our universe.
My both parents, they were educated, they were doctors, right? And I also see my dad, he was one of the progressive guys, but he still wanted me to become a teacher so I could be more home. So, you know, then when the kids have vacation, this, he was like, you know, this is the profession for women. Women have to take care of their children, they have to be at home. And, you know, this is just like one of the examples that your place is at home. You have to be good at cooking and taking care of the children and, you know, receiving the guests and et cetera, et cetera. So you are not asked of your opinion that much.
You know, I was born here in the Netherlands, but I grew up with two cultures. And what happened with me is actually very paradoxical. I started having two kind of identities. One in the Turkish community, which I was this very quiet, proper, neat girl. Don't open your mouth, just study. And then what happened because I saw the chance, I started working when I was 14, you know, for shops, supermarkets and all. And then I thought, I can say something here, you know, it is allowed to open and openly express what you think. And I kind of started overcompensating with, you know, I could say anything when studying, but when we were in family environments, you know, I used to be a lot quiet, even though I didn't want. And I remember one occasion that I was with my dad at the Turkish market in the Netherlands. And my dad was negotiating with the guy and I didn't agree on something. I was only 15, 16. And I said, hey, but that's much more expensive because the other carpet is cheaper or something. And the guy, he told me off next to my dad.
Get impatient, you know, about things in life. Get moving. So I think this is because we have so much survey here, opinion there, analysis there, technology here. You know, sometimes you need to trust your gut and go ahead and do it. You're doing what you're doing today with the best intentions and the skills you know as of today. Within 1.5 year, you will know better, right? But you cannot sit back and say, hey, you know, half a year, I'm gonna be this and that. So you just go ahead and do it because you're impatient to get things done. If it's a failure, listen, it's your failure.
Gulshanay Tolipova is my guest today. She was born and raised in Uzbekistan, a country in Central Asia. On the age of 22, she moved from Uzbekistan to Denmark to study. After her studies, she applied at the Danish fashion company Bestseller. She was quickly recognized by the founder of the company, Truls Holk Poulsen. She was initially hesitant to have a conversation with him and even tell him what was not right, what she thought, because she learned in her home country, Uzbekistan, to respect founders of companies, to respect people that are older than her, and especially to respect men. So Gulshanay became the international marketing and e-commerce manager of two big brands within Bestseller. And Gulshanay and I, we are openly talking about how our upbringing as a girl in Uzbekistan and by Turkish parents in the Netherlands, for me, made us the women we are today. Gulshanai is seen as a very confident, strong woman with endurance, and she gets a lot of questions of how she is confident and how she got strong. In this episode, she will tell us more about how she got strong and what she also thinks that a lot of women are strong, but we do not really recognize this. Here's Gulshanai. I am so excited for you as a listener to listen to this very inspirational and powerful woman. Enjoy it. Thank you so much, Gulshanai. I mean, in all these times, busy with different things that you said, yeah. Okay, I'm up for this. I'm up for coming on Bridging. Thank you so much for just being here. I really appreciate it so much.
You know, it's my pleasure.
You are coming from Central Asia. You were born and raised there in Uzbekistan, a country which is between Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, and then there's this
Tajikistan.
Tajikistan.
Yeah.
And you're coming from this country. You have studied there too, and then you came to study to Denmark. Mm-hmm. In Horsens, you started off.
Yeah.
And when I first met you, maybe you didn't meet me, but I have listened to a lecture of a presentation of you back in 2016 in the company Bestseller. And I was really inspired by your story. And you said something like, I finished my school. I came to apply at Bestseller and I went inside and you became the personal assistant of the founder of Bestseller, Truls Haak Paulsen. Can you tell us a little bit about this background? How was this to come as a girl from Uzbekistan, studying to Denmark and starting as a PA for the founder of the company?
Yeah. Of course, yeah. The thing is that, when I'm telling my life story about just having this need of trying something else than Uzbekistan, I always wanted to see, I knew that the world was bigger than Uzbekistan. And as a woman, I always wanted, my rights also have to be respected. I want to have an equal relationship where in Uzbekistan, it's not the same. Let's just, lay it out there. So then I studied, to become a teacher in Uzbekistan.
Okay.
But on my final year, we do after 4 years, we do practical placement.
Yeah.
I went to school and I had to give a lesson in English for the seventh grade.
Yeah.
So I come into the classroom and normally we have on average from 35 to 45 children in a class.
Yeah.
And so I walk in, nobody listens to what I'm saying. It was like a big chaos. So that day I looked and I said, I cannot do this. This is not me. I cannot become a teacher. And I have a big respect for people who do that,
Yeah.
So I decided to seek something else than teaching.
Yes.
Then I went I found a job in an international company and worked as an office manager. Mm-hmm. So then I said, okay, I have to try to study outside of Uzbekistan. Then came to Denmark, long story short, studied in Denmark in Horsens, which was I don't know how many people are there. What, less than 100,000, very small city. Coming from Andijan, which is a little bit less than a million,
yes.
It was shocking. And imagine Islam, it's completely two different worlds, right? Uzbekistan and Europe.
Yes.
When I came here, first of all, it was super cold and rainy and the days were short. I came in August, but it was cold, we would have it in, beginning of the winter.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of things. There were a lot of cultural, but also weather-wise, differences.
And it's not only Europe, but one of the most western parts of Europe, Denmark.
Yeah.
The exactly. Scandics, the Scandinavian.
Yeah. So I managed to study and then I applied for a practical placement in Bestseller because I was in Horsens and they had an office in Horsens. And I Actually, knew Turkish guy called Cihan, who was head of buying. So I said, you know, I was doing value chain management. I said, I really, really want to try that. And he said, yeah, of course, why not? I need an assistant. Let's have an interview. I had an interview and everything went fine. So I had a start date. But then I received a phone call from Cihan. He's like, Gulshana, you know what? You know, our founder Trolls wants to see you. And I was like, okay, really? Why? He was like, just come by. You know, he's a curious guy, so he wants to see you. So, and normally, Trolls was the one signing the contracts of everyone at that time, okay, in 2008.
Yeah.
So he was the one really. So apparently what happened when he was signing the contract, he saw my name, Gulshanoy Tolipova.
Yeah.
Then he was like, who is she? I'd like to meet her. You know, like, how come she's in Horsens?
Okay.
So he got curious, and I went for an interview with him, which was really like strange. I've never had an interview like this in my life. I walk into the room and there are three other gentlemen, and Trolls is there just having a normal conversation with them. And I ask him, should I wait? Should I stay outside? And he's like, no, just grab a chair, come in. So, you know, I think this was like the way how he, first of all, he didn't have time, of course, but the second of all, I think he also wanted to see the reaction. Mm. Trolls is not the guy who is acting by the book.
Okay.
You know, he's not
like that.
Yeah, he's not like, this is how it's supposed to be. This is the social norm. This is, yeah, what is expected. So it's completely opposite of that. And it was the first moment for me ever to encounter this, you know, because I come from a culture where men, and especially like the founder of a company, is respected. Like,
yeah,
you know, you have like some kind of authority towards a person. But this was a completely different. Absolutely. And then apparently, probably I had something right. So, yeah, he gave me a job.
Okay.
You know, initially, I was not his PA. I worked for Henrik Mathiesen as his PA, but I worked with Trolls a lot regarding Middle East and Russia, Russian markets.
Okay. So was that the reason, like, you know, you coming from Uzbekistan was actually a very big benefit?
Yeah.
Did you enter this office?
Yeah, it was. The thing is that Islam, our culture, Uzbekistan, is as a part of greater Middle East.
Yeah.
But at the same time, for many, many years, we have been under USSR, right? So I speak,
yes,
Russian, and we grew up with the Russian culture and history, but our religion has been Islam, right?
Yes, yes.
So, and it's super smart from Trolls to use my skills on Middle East, because,
yes,
I would understand, you know, what they're talking about.
The culture, the religion, the language.
Exactly. Yeah. And when they say yes, it's not necessarily yes.
Yes.
You know, so and at the same time, also work with me for Russia, for Eastern European markets. So, yeah, it was super exciting to work with him. Yeah.
So, you know, you said initially something about like it is how women are in Uzbekistan is different, mm, than, you know, where you,
yeah,
came in Denmark. Mm. My parents are from Turkey and I have never been to Uzbekistan, but the, mm, things I know a little bit about it, it's, even though it is different than Turkey, it is still, you know, there are similar things. Also the religion is similar, mm, you know, the, mm, Islam. Can you just name few differences between like what you experience when you are working back in Uzbekistan as a woman, mm, and as a woman working for Bestseller, a Danish company in Denmark? I have,
yeah,
also, you know, later on something to say, because I also feel very big differences, mm, between, mm, the two,
yeah,
cultures, the Dutch and the Turkish.
Yeah, of course. You know, the thing is that I can give you a very personal, like, an example. For example, my father, my both parents, they were educated. They were doctors, right?
Yeah.
And I also see my dad. He was one of the progressive guys. But he still wanted me to become a teacher so I could be more home.
Mm.
So, you know, then when the kids have vacation, this, he was like, you know, this is the profession for women.
Yes.
Women have to take care of their children. They have to be at home. And, you know, this is just like one of the examples that your place is at home. you have to be good at cooking and taking care of the children and, you know, receiving the guests and et cetera, et cetera. So you are not asked of your opinion that much.
Yes.
And working in Uzbekistan, I also was an office manager, but I also faced, like, let's say I had to make a new lease contract, like leasing a new location for our office. I had to have a man next to me for the guy to sign it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and then I would come and I would represent the company. I had a French boss.
Yeah.
But if I would go there alone, they would either not return my phone calls or like they would want to see someone else. So I had to have a man next to me to legitimize that this was actually something. Yeah. Serious.
Serious.
If it makes sense. Yeah.
Is this the sign of seriousness and power maybe?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if you know that, but I don't know if I've ever told you, but I've been also educated as a teacher and after that, child psychologist. Mm-hmm. And my father, you know, he's not a doctor. He didn't go to college and he was a lot encouraging me to study. But actually also I remember so much that he said, it's so nice to be a teacher because you work kind of part-time in the afternoons, you come home, you look after your children. And that's, I had also a lot, and also that's actually a little bit being quiet. You know, I could say anything when studying, mm-hmm. but when we were in family environments, you know, I used to be a lot quiet, even though I didn't want. And I remember one occasion that I was with my dad at the Turkish market in the Netherlands. And my dad was negotiating with the guy and I didn't agree on something. I was only 15, 16. And I said, hey, but that's much more expensive because the other carpet is cheaper or something. And the guy, he told me off next to my dad. He said like, hey, but your daughter talks a lot. Yeah, and, you know, and it was in the Netherlands, Turkish, two men. And my dad somehow, you know, he didn't kind of defend me, but he also didn't say anything. He was also kind of like blocked.
Yeah.
But that was also for me a moment to like, really like, what's happening here? Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that is coming from the Turkish culture I grew up with. You know, there might be varieties. But when working for the Dutch organizations or international organizations in different countries, when I experienced it differently, I kind of also felt I have a voice. I can say what I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the thing, you know, like when I moved to Denmark, imagine I have this baggage with me, right? I grew up, I was 22, so I am almost finishing my adolescence. Mm-hmm. So, and I come here and then there's this guy who's the founder of the company.
Yeah.
And he asks me to do this and that. And this was difficult for me. I never forget the moment where I told to my boss, Henrik, I said, Henrik, listen, I don't think I can do the job with Strauss because it's, you know, there are things which I don't agree with him, but because of his age, because of what he does, I don't dare to tell these things to him.
Indeed. I can recognize this. I can relate this so much. Like, I'm just scared because he is that.
Exactly. And I was like, I cannot because, I mean, I will be so disappointed in myself and I'm going to disappoint him. So I think you need to find someone else to do this.
Yeah.
And then actually this was very powerful. You know, Islam, and Henrik made me to say this to Trolls. So I told him this. I told him that in my culture, it's different. I grew up different. It's going to be difficult for me to tell you my direct opinion. You know what he did? He just smiled and left the room. He didn't say anything. Because, of course, for him, it was not like a discovery, right? He knew that.
Yes.
But I guess he saw the guts in me to be able to say this.
Yeah, even though you were uncomfortable?
Yeah, I was red in my face and like, you know, my voice was shaking and I was like, oh my God, what if I'm going to lose my job? You know, I needed this practical placement because, you know, but no, he just smiled and left the office and I felt so relieved.
Yeah.
Like really, I was like, okay, this is different. it's different here. But it took me a long time to get to the level where I know that I have equal rights like men.
Okay. You know, actually, it is really funny in a way, because you said you were 22 when you came from Uzbekistan. You moved from Uzbekistan to Denmark. And, you know, I was born here in the Netherlands, but I grew up with two cultures. And what happened with me is actually very paradoxical. I started having two kind of identities, one in the Turkish community, which I was this very quiet, proper, neat girl.
Yeah.
Don't open your mouth, just study.
Yeah.
And then what happened when because I saw the chance, I started working when I was 14, you know, for shops, supermarkets and all. And then I thought, I can say something here, you know, it is allowed to open and openly express what you think. And I kind of started overcompensating with, I was really like the bitch. Like, you know, I just, this is what I think.
Yeah.
But back at home, or back with my Turkish friends community, or especially men, to respect them, I was so scared to open my mouth. So the two identities were parallel, you know, next to each other. Because when I was working at the same company as you did, you know, I know also the HR perceived me as, she has got, she says it, but when you see me back in my social life, I'm like, whoa.
No, it's the same for me. When I go to Uzbekistan, when I am together with my family, my uncles and the elder of the house and all this, I am, it's not like, you know, there are things where I cannot shut my mouth. I just, you know, there are things which is difficult for me as a woman. When I see other women being not treated right, I cannot say nothing. But yeah, you're right. I think I also have a two different identities where, but it's my choice now, right?
Yes.
I adjust it. I choose to do this because I'm there for a week. I want to enjoy my time.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree with this. Also with my Turkish family or friends, I'm like, okay, it's fine. You know, I don't need to do it here. But if I see anything that is really not equal, or I feel like this is not fair, my kind of like the blood is pumping up. I'm like, okay, now it's time to say something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Gülşen, you work already for 12 years in the company, and you are part of the management team, like the global management team. I'm not fully sure actually how the division is between male and female in the management team, but how do you bring your feminine energy? You know, I'm not talking about, how do you say it, being a female in a sexual aspect, but more like, you know, this feminine side of all of us, even men have it, but women have it maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
How do you bring that back in the business, in the management team where a lot of male are present, and also with your team that you are leading?
To answer your question, I think I just need to define what I understand when you say feminine, you know, side or leadership. I have a huge advantage. The thing is that I am a mother of two boys.
Yes.
And I have been married, divorced. I don't know if it's an advantage, but it's a life experience.
Yes.
And I'm married again. And I actually have an excessively feminine manager. Our management team, we are four women leading the business. Mm-hmm. And then we have Henrik next to us.
Yes.
And we all four women have our own responsibility areas. How I use the feminine part is that when you've been through something, you really understand that you need to empower women. We lack in general confidence. Like, you know, I cannot stand where, let's say, if my female colleague is pregnant, and she's almost apologetic saying that she's pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, like I am saying, listen, this is one of the best events in your life.
Yes.
Let's celebrate this. I am so happy for you. You know, feeling like guilty coming back to the same position. Like, no, you can do this. You can definitely take exactly the same level. Yes, of course, if you don't want it, this is something else. But if you're lacking confidence just because you have given a birth and become a mother.
Yeah.
Come on, you know, as a manager, as a leader, I empower my employees to feel that they shouldn't feel guilty because they have to become a mother or got married or getting divorced or whatever it comes up in your life. You know, for me, I keep it completely separate. I actually see when women have children mm-hmm. and when they're coming back after maternity leave to job, you know, to work, they are so efficient because they don't have any time to waste.
Yes.
Not standing by the coffee. They are really, you know, I'm like so happy to receive them back when they're coming back from maternity leave.
Because they have to wake up early in the morning or at night, and they need to feed the baby. Yeah. They need to arrange all the things.
Yeah.
And how do you empower them, Gulshana, as a leader, when they come to you and saying, like, maybe in a very timid way, oh, I am pregnant, I'll be off from the job for a few months or maybe a year even?
Well, I have had those experiences. I am like, first of all, you know, I'm really direct, but I tell them, listen, first of all, let's raise our voice. You have to be happy telling me this.
Yes.
And you should not feel guilty. This is an awesome event. So I actually tell them exactly how I'm telling you now. Yes, I understand that, you know, you would be stepping back from your career, but come on, it's such a joyful event of your life, and it's going to make you more experienced coming back to what you've been doing before. So I really tell them to not to feel ashamed of becoming a mother or going on maternity leave or taking a leave or whatever, you know, reasons they have. And I sometimes I've struggled, like, how come we have become like this? You know, why do we feel guilty for creating a family?
Yes. Yes. You know, it is also, you know, there's of course a lot of feminism going on, especially the last few years, much more, you know, the words used. And I sometimes even feel like because of, you know, being a feminist, like we should strive for equal rights, but we should also kind of be equal as men. Like, you know, I believe there's a difference between having equal rights, but also be equal. But I don't think I am equal, not equal, but I'm the same as men are.
No,
you know,
exactly.
I have different hormones than men have. And, you know, where I am maybe happy, I have never been pregnant, but when I will be happy with something very feminine or maybe caring of someone or I don't know, any other thing, a man would not feel that because he is different. And when I feel like someone is looking after me, I really get happy. A man maybe doesn't have anything to do with that. But that's something so different than having equal rights. And sometimes, do you feel sometimes that some people or some women kind of like, how do you say it, overcompensated with, like, you know, I need to be equal, so I should do the same things as men do? I like chatting with my friends, girlfriends for hours and laugh and have tea and chocolate, all these stuff. Men don't do that, you know. Most men, not all of them, most men. How do you see that?
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, I think for me, it's not a competition, right? It's not like I completely agree with you. I think for me, it's like women and men, they have their own struggles. Like you say, we are biologically functioning slightly different, you know, the reproductive system, hormones and everything. But what makes me alert when I see a man, let's say if I have a male employee in a room, in a meeting room, and a woman, and I know that the woman have done 10 times more accomplishment, but she doesn't say anything because she doesn't think she has done accomplishments. But the man sits there with like 5 accomplishments and cannot stop talking about it, or, you know, something like that. And I notice her not actually acknowledging that she have done something much more than her male colleague. And there I'm like, there I can be a little bit like, come on, you know, this or that, you've done this as well, and give them a bit like, and remind them that it's cool. They have to be proud of what they have accomplished. So I don't know. I think we lack in general, or what I've seen, like we lack to feel like, yeah, of course I've done that. Yes, of course, I've done it better sometimes.
Yes.
A woman or male, or, you know. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, how strong are you yourself, actually? I mean, for me, you know, I have been, I believe a lot in energies, and, you know, sometimes some things are not explainable. But when I was in your presence in any room, even like in the canteen, I felt a very strong woman walking next to me. Even I didn't talk to you that moment. How strong are you?
You know, the thing is that I like this expression, which says, you just can't beat the person who never gives up, right? And for me, I don't give up on, you have to challenge me extra time. And there are things I have faced in my life, which I haven't given up. And Özlem, you know, work is not the only thing which is forming us.
Yes.
Right? I have unfortunately lost my dad when I was 19 years old. He passed away suddenly.
I'm sorry to hear.
Yeah, and then I also lost my mom for 2 years ago. So I became very strong from an early age. From 19 years old, I had to, and we are five in my family, you know, like I'm the third child. Mm-hmm. And my mom was working, but you still had to be strong to continue fighting for your dream.
Yes.
And I at the same time, I wanted to help financially my mom by taking care of my own expenses. So, you know, like at the university, I started teaching and having second jobs. And that's how I actually managed my own expenses so that I don't come home and ask my mom for money. So, you know, things like that in life make you really strong. And failures make you strong.
Yes.
And it was a failure for me when my marriage with my ex-husband didn't succeed the first time. But I had to take a decision that, no, I have to be strong for this. So I hear a lot. People tell me that I'm really strong, but I don't know it otherwise.
Do I understand it right that you're saying like things, all everything beside the job or the studies, what you're doing, the life experience, the things that you went through make you actually, can make you very strong.
Yeah,
and exactly. To also be perceived at work very strong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I don't believe in like having an easy go-to life without any problems. You have to, you know, it's actually you have to take the chance, be impatient, sometimes fail and come out stronger.
You know, I watched a TED Talk a few years ago about the HR, the head HR director woman from the States. And she said something about when I get two resumes, one from someone which she calls a silver spoon, like, you know, someone got raised in a really nice family, didn't have that much problems, went to good colleges, universities, has also financial wealth. So you already know like, hey, this is great, Harvard graduate. And then you have another one which has job hopping or something happened in the private life, but she doesn't know, you know, it doesn't say anything. But a lot of like, what is this actually? And she initially thinks like, hey, I need to get the silver spoon because I know that's already good, like kind of biased even. And then when she did much more research and also started inviting these people, she saw like, you know, for example, one was abused at home. The other one had lost a family member. The other one was homeless. The other one, something happened.
Yeah.
And she said like, you know, I usually go for that because I know these people have kind of built grits in order to overcome a lot of situations. And they are like, do I need to do a financial problem or solve? It doesn't matter for me. I have solved so many problems back at home, like, you know, because of a lot of things. And my dad, for example, he was very disciplined in our household and he made us pay the rent of our house. My brother and I was so upset with him.
Wow.
Always. And I was like, because, you know, the rent was even, he could pay it, by the way, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was so upset and he learned that from his dad and he was like, you know, one pays the electricity, the other one the water, and the other one the rent. And I was like, I'm a student.
Yeah.
I was earning so little. We found a way and we paid it. But back then, you know, I was like, oh my God, I don't, this is not good. This is not good.
Yeah, this is not normal.
This
is
not normal. My friends don't need to do anything. And then when I moved to Istanbul, I kind of had an aha moment. I was in a tram and I just called him. I said, I just want to thank you so much. Thank you so much, because it's kind of made me strong.
Exactly.
I think, I don't know how you see it, and I'm curious if you, you know, you are in a high position in bestseller. Do you think, not only in bestseller, but in general, in the world, HR people really more beyond the resume of a person, like to the personality of people? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's, first of all, I love your dad. You know, I think it's awesome, because listen, it's not easy to do that. As a dad, it's not easy. It's a work, and you have to bear all this. It's easier to just pay for it. So first of all, I think it's awesome that he did that. Regarding HR, you know, in bestseller, we don't have HR hiring people. So in my 12 years of experience, I am the one hiring. It's the manager's job who do that.
Yes.
So we as managers also have a bigger HR responsibility when we sit, and we are the ones selecting people who we would like to interview. You know, of course, we have assistants who do, let's say, if there are 280 CVs, applications,
yes,
they screen and then they choose, okay, we have to sort some applicants through, but then it's us who does that. And I think, unfortunately, it's very selective. It's not general, broad practice, you know,
yes,
like looking into, hey, who is she behind this paper?
Yes.
Like, you know, things that I actually, one of the first things I ask in the interview is that, my first question is, now I'm revealing it here, is...
Okay,
tell
guys,
about...
if you want to apply pieces...
yeah, exactly, yeah. Then maybe I'm going to change
the question.
This. Yeah, this is the question. No, the thing is that I always ask, please tell me about something which is not written on your CV. I'd like to know you as a person, who you are, not what's written on the CV. And there people pose for a minute, right? And then sometimes they tell life stories. And that's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Peter Dale, he does it too. He interviewed me, Peter Dale.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, he said something like, did you ever fail? I was like, ever? I think I failed so many times. And then a long story came.
Yeah.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about the strength, you know, you are strong. You told a little bit the private situations, what you went through. How about confidence? Gulshanoy, does your confidence come with your strength, or were you already confident and your strength came? How is that?
No, I think it's a combination of both, you know, and I still think there are a lot of things I'm not confident at, like, but the more you do, the more confident you get, because for brain, it gets on a subconscious level, right? You are, mm-hmm, like subconsciously doing certain things,
mm-hmm,
and people are like, wow, this is confident. But for you, it's just you do this because you have done it so many times.
Mm.
But the thing is that for me, how confidence came gradually, and a lot of it has been given by the people who trusted in me. You know, you need this one person who really trusts in you. And I have had, luckily, many of them who, when I was not confident, it was trolls, for example.
Yes.
He was pushing me, like, you know, I was like, I cannot do this, or like, this is a big task. Am I going to get in trouble with a country manager of Middle East? Or he was like, listen, I am next to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are things which people have done which gain me confidence. And when you do a certain thing which you're not afraid of, then you're like, okay, this was not that difficult. So I think, you know, life experiences, going through difficult discussions, being afraid, being vulnerable.
Yes.
But having this someone behind you, supporting you, can be a very powerful thing.
Yeah, sometimes it takes only one person that really believes,
exactly,
in your skills. So, you know, is there a kind of a formula or something to gain the trust of a person in you, like, you know, Truls did it. Is it luck? Or I don't think so, because I really believe you. They trust you or not, you earn it.
Yeah, you have to earn it. I think it's the thing is that, like, we too spoke about authenticity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being authentic,
mm-hmm,
and But I think if you really get to know someone with their flaws and plus and minuses, etc., and you start trusting people, trust doesn't come. Trust as itself, trust comes through dialogue. You need to have a dialogue established in order to start trusting each other.
Yes.
Right? So I think it's like, and for trolls, we had to do things together, and he had to see me in action so he could trust me more and more and more. And he did. He did trust me more and more. And he actually, I have to thank him a lot for the things he has really pushed me through. That made me only stronger.
So the push, was that also a part of challenging you?
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, for like 6 or 7 years ago, I was working for Vera Moda, just taking care of the Dutch stores. I had like value chain manager. It's basically you communicate with the country manager, like people, partners who own shops, and then you speak to them. And then Trolls calls me one day. He says to me, Gulshanoy, listen, I need you to take over the role of a retail manager. I want you, we have own stores, 163 stores. We have shops in 7 markets. You will have a team running our own operation. So it's like, it was like, you know, I could not believe that I was able to do this myself. So I actually turned down. I said, no, thank you very much. I'm fine doing what I'm doing, because I was scared, you know?
Yeah.
But then he said to me, I'll call you back. And he called me back again after 3 months. And he said, are you ready now? By that time, you know, I was thinking about this, and there was another female partner working with Pisa. She was like, come on, Gulshanoy, you have to do this and you can do this. And she was like being, you know, the one which is like really pushing me. And then actually when Trolls called me, I said, you know what? Okay, let's do this. So he was persistent and he believed in me more than I believed in me myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, 12 years a journey in bestseller. And, you know, there's also a lot of endurance, like, you know, in athletes talk a lot about this, like, you know, maybe it's good to be strong in one moment, 2 moments, 1 year, maybe 2 years, but this endurance of day in, day out for this big amount of time, how do you keep that endurance? Are you in some activities involved, like, for example, maybe spirituality or any sports, or what do you do in order to keep that endurance?
Yeah, well, I self-development is a big part of me, and I always strive to, okay, can I become better? Spirituality, I don't know. But the thing is that I meditate twice a day, you know, and I have done it for the past 3 years. And for me, this is essential, because you need to have a moment where you become nobody, where you are not Gulshanoy working, a mother, or, you know, you just need to become a nobody, where you sit there yourself, listen to your heartbeat or feel your muscle or whatever, you know, just like get your mind away from your busy life.
Yes.
And that's really making you strong, because you are focusing better.
Okay.
You are focusing better. You are able to concentrate. You see things more clear, like, okay, we are talking about this, exactly this thing. And I read a lot. I read a lot of autobiographies of very famous and strong people.
What are you reading now? Which book are you reading now?
Yeah, I'm actually reading, I'm really bad at remembering what name of the books, but I strongly believe in neuroscience.
Okay.
You know, I'm super curious in neuroscience. Yeah. So I'm reading about a book, Inventing Ourselves.
Is it The Breaking the Habit of Yourself, Dr. Joe Dispenza?
I have read that.
I have read it too. Yes.
Yeah. Joe Dispenza, for me, I think he's awesome. Yeah, really. Yeah.
He is such. Yes, I know him. I've read him last year. I meditated for the 6 months with him.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
Well, not with him, cool. But, you know, with the audio that he's having.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like really tapping in that to that potential, human potential. And already when you meditate, he says, like, put yourself already in a state of being that or being this, whatever that is, being a good mom or being an athlete. Put your already do as of you feel it, or not as of, but feel it. You are that.
I think there are, if you really understand how we are working, you know, how actually how our brain is working. Let's say the amygdala, you know, that we like the stress factor. How does it come? Why there are things you cannot control? I mean, for me, it's because I have a very analytical brain. Mm-hmm. So things have to make sense for me. So yeah, I know Joe Dispenza. I think he's super cool. I follow him on Instagram and I follow his work. Yeah, I also listen to his meditations. It was difficult for me though.
Yeah, I think it's not the easiest one, but you know there are different kind of technique of meditation, right? You know, I always, you know, I started this personal development journey 7-8 years ago, and I thought there's one way, and when you start there, it should go only this way. And the more I started doing different things, started looking at things from different angles. And sometimes some things work for me very well, but not for you. And for the other one, a little bit. And I think everyone should find his or her way, what works for him or her well. But I definitely believe that we all really need to become still and look inwards. If that is with any religion or spirituality, meditation or sports, anything, whatever that might be, because that gives clarity.
Absolutely. Clarity is the right word. You know, like if we come back to endurance, for me, is like, for me, having a mother who just, regardless of whatever toughness she faced in her life, she never gave up. She never told us that she had a hard day. Or having a mentor who, I have a lot of mentors, by the way. I believe in mentorship. I think we have to do it more, you know. Yeah. I ask them, could you please be my mentor? Or they volunteer themselves. You know, if I come with my very life problem, they're like, listen, I want to become your mentor. So, and sports as well.
Yeah.
You know, like really push your body physically to the things you think you cannot, but you actually can.
Yes.
Then you really become like, okay, I can do even more. So endurance come in many shapes. It's a mental endurance, it's a physical endurance, it's psychological endurance, and for me, I don't, you know, like as I told you, just can't beat the person who never gives up. I cannot give up. That's maybe my problem, like in anything.
But one thing about your mother and giving up, Gulshana, because this is extremely interesting. This is what I meant with energy, because lately, the last few days, I've been thinking about my mom a lot. She lives in another city in the Netherlands. And also about giving up that part. Mm-hmm. I've been through a situation the last few days. And, you know, and I have an extreme mentality of not giving up, like not surrendering to anything, you know, no. And my mom, she also doesn't really that much give up, but she has also another side that she, whatever happens to her, maybe, you know, someone said something bad to her, let's say that.
Yeah.
She has gone through different things. She also, her parents were not alive since she was a child, they died. And she kind of didn't open really her mouth. She was just quiet and she kind of surrendered. She didn't say, okay, thank you or something for doing, but more, you know, something happened by my grandmother, let's say. And she was like, okay. And I perceived her as a very weak woman when I was a child. I was like, open your mouth, mom. Come on, say something.
Yes, say something.
You have to say something. This one. But the last week, I really came to recognize how powerful she actually is by not reacting, by trusting the universe in her way, like she's religious in God.
Mm.
And I was like, this is such a powerful thing because I have difficulties with acceptance. I'm like, no, I should do something. I should solve the problem. And she looks at it from a totally different angle. And this is such a powerful act, what she is doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that the older we get, the wisdom, it comes, right? That's why the wisdom, what is wisdom? Wisdom is something that it's your life experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's like what you've lived through. It's not, you cannot be wise and be 5-year-old.
Yes.
You are reflecting on things and your ability of reflecting on something. Of course, this is something that you are there to be able to reflect on it. And for me, you know, when I'm talking about my mother, she had cancer, breast cancer, when she was 40 years old. And after 2 years, my father passes away, right? And she is going through chemo, through radiation, through a lot of things. And she was also a doctor. And she is left with five children that she needs to provide for.
Yeah.
And we just talked about the role of a woman in our society, right? And looking back, but also at the time, she lived after the first cancer was diagnosed for 15 years. But I never remember her complaining, why me? Oh my God, I'm the most unlucky person, or, you know, like, or I don't feel well, I'm just going to lie. And probably she should have done that sometimes, but maybe she should have done it. She have done it to her mother, to her sisters. But for us, she just showed, okay, this is life. We need to go on with life. And I'm going to do everything I can to provide the best for you. And we are all highly educated, you know, in our family. So for me, this is endurance.
Yes.
Not like not giving up, being stubborn. Yeah. And, you know, it's not about that. It's like about putting yourself second, adjusting to situation, and just like there, it can be very painful, but at the same time, maybe she's actually was getting joy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's really funny that we talk about our mothers. Like, I do want to give another sample of my mother, because she got married when she was 19, 20 year old. And, you know, back that time in the 80s, they didn't use any birth control or something. You just get married and you just get kids,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she didn't get kids for a long time. That perception, 1.5 years or something, she didn't get pregnant. And this is another family member telling me this when I was a child, like that my grandmother wanted to get another wife for my dad because she didn't get children in 1.5 year time. But my mom, she never ever said something to my grandmother, nothing. When I was growing up, nothing. Like, it was always like, oh, we need to bring her food, we need to be happy to her, you know. And she was like, I have kids now, you know. But
yeah,
that's, I would, you know, because knowing me for 5 years ago, I would be like, who are you? Why do you say this to me? You know?
Yeah.
And I think I'm not giving up, but that is not the way, the thing of giving up, what you also explained.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I think we need to really like categorize it differently, right? Like, life endurance is one thing, but physical endurance is another thing. Like athletes, what they can endure, or astronauts, what they can endure. So yeah, it comes in many different shapes.
How far do you think that you can push yourself?
In which sense?
Like in a physical, but then also a mental health way.
You know, I am so lucky that I have a very strong mental health. I think, you know, you can be weak. Let's say I have a fever lying there, like, you know, very, or can be sick for like weeks or days, etc. That can never put me down. So I think we need to acknowledge there are two strengths you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a body which is strong because you work on it,
mm-hmm.
but the mental strengths, that this is something you build with time. And I have realized through the things I have been in life, sometimes my friends, they're like, wow, you have a very difficult life. I'm like, thank you very much, but this is not exactly what I want to hear, because I don't think my life has been difficult.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I have, even though for them, it seems like I have lost my parents young and I have been through a lot of things, but I feel lucky. I had an amazing childhood. I was loved. I am healthy. I have children. So, you know, I'm successful at work. I help many other women around me and men. So I don't see myself as a victim. I see actually myself as someone who has ownership over my life.
Yes. Yes. So you already think that. So you experience it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Amazing. So is there a message, Gulshanoy, you know, we are coming to an end almost, a message that you would like to give men and women, which kind of admire this idea that you're having, or, you know, that also would like to be stronger, maybe also, I think, you know, many people are strong, but sometimes needs to get out of them, you know, to just really express their strength, confidence and also endurance, because sometimes in our society, confidence can be also seen, perceived by others like us.
Yeah, exactly. What I actually, this might sound strange, but I hope it doesn't. But I actually want people to become a little bit more impatient. Not impatient like swearing at the queue or stuff like that, but impatient for their dreams to come, for the things they want to accomplish. You know, I mean, yes, if you are sleeping on a bed which is so uncomfortable and you are thinking of buying something new, do not waste your time making a research for 8 months. Go get it. Get impatient, you know, about things in life. Get moving. So I think this is because we have so much survey here, opinion there, analysis there, technology here. You know, sometimes you need to trust your gut.
Yes.
And go ahead and do it. You're doing what you're doing today with the best intentions and the skills you know as of today.
Mm-hmm.
Within 1.5 years, you will know better. Right? But you cannot sit back and say, hey, you know, half a year, I'm going to be this and that. So you just go ahead and do it because you're impatient to get things done.
Yes.
So yes, I think regardless of it's a mental health, endurance, strength, supporting each other, being a leader at anything, get impatient about that. For me, it's like, let's just go ahead and do it.
Okay, and being a leader in anything, like being your own leader first, like taking ownership of your own life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and if it's a failure, listen, it's your failure.
Yes,
and you're gonna learn from it. Yeah, so it's about the mindset and I don't know, positivity. I believe in positivity and optimism. So always having this in the backpack, right?
Yeah, thank you so much, Gülşenoy. You know, we could talk for hours, I think.
Exactly.
I would love to talk to you again one more time, but thank you so much. Because I hope
it's my pleasure.
And I really believe that this will bring so many people out there, women and men, some knowledge. And also, I think they can feel also the energy that you have brought in this podcast. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. If you have loved this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. You can find me on Instagram at ozkanozlem, at ozkanozlem. If you want to let me know what you have enjoyed, or you want to share your takeaways with me, or you want to let me know what you want to hear in the next episode of Bridging, find the latest post on Instagram and leave a comment or ask a question. Thank you so much for listening.